This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
This is Chicago's all-news station, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
WBBM News Time, 1205. It's great to have you with us for the Tuesday edition of the Noon Business Hour. I'm Cisco Cotto.
And I'm Chris Kreidel. We've got a fresh coating to an inch of snow on the way here in Chicago. A high today of 36. The five-day forecast is coming up.
The Noon Business Hour, presented by Old Second Bank. Let's kick things off with an update of Wall Street. At Bloomberg, here's Elisa Parenti.
Cisco and Chris, the Dow is gaining 327 points, or 1.33%. NASDAQ also in rally mode at 7,400, gaining 92 points. S&P higher by 32. The Bloomberg WBBM Chicago Index is gaining about 3% on the day. So stocks are headed higher on negotiations between the U.S. and China to end the trade dispute. And as members of Congress arrive at an agreement to avert another government shutdown, President Trump has said only that he's not crazy about the arrangement that was worked out between members of both sides of the aisle that would avert the shutdown, but he hasn't ruled it out either. It would fund part of a border wall. January Small Business Optimism Index dropped to the lowest level since the 2016 presidential election. That from the National Federation of Independent Business. The data are the latest to point to slower economic growth. And still the labor market remains tight. Job openings set a record in December, topping the 7.3 million mark. That outstrips 2018 job growth of roughly 2.6 million. Back to you, Cisco and Chris.
Thanks, Elisa. On today's Noon Business Hour, there is a good chance that we'll see another border security deal or an attempt at it. And Chicago's latest storm is closing streets and holding back flights.
Also, social media and divorce, the social media age making things even harder when a relationship breaks up. All of that and loads more on today's Noon Business Hour.
Making sense of your dollars, the WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
The FDA has sent a warning letter to a major drug distributor for the way it's dealing with opioids. We're going to cover that in our next segment. Right now, a tentative budget agreement has been reached in Washington. While it appears that prospects are brightening for a U.S.-China trade deal, we're joined by Chris Lowe, chief economist at FTN Financial in New York. Welcome back to the Noon Business Hour, Chris. What is the status of these prospective deals?
Thank you. Well, I guess the word is, one, they're working on it, and two, there's some optimism from the White House that this vaunted meeting between Presidents Trump and Xi, which was, we hoped, going to take place before March 1st. That's when the tariffs come back into effect. That was delayed back when Wilbur Ross a week ago said the two sides were miles and miles apart. Now the word from the White House is that they hope that meeting will take place soon. And what the market's interpreting that to mean is that, therefore, an agreement must be close, that some of these thorny issues about protecting intellectual property and that kind of thing must be close to an agreeable settlement.
Yeah, they cannot send these workers back again. They can't do it, can they?
Oh, the shutdown? No, I don't think so. And the border deal is, I mean, just the fact that Republicans and Democrats managed to reach an agreement that there is some money for border security, even if it's not what the White House wants, is terrific news. Although the word from the White House there is that the president doesn't much like the deal. That doesn't mean he won't sign it. But at the moment, all he said about it is he's not happy with it.
You touched on trade with China. You have this interesting situation out of Alabama where U.S. Steel may actually restart work on a mill there. And it's at least in part because of the tariffs.
That's right. And What I'm hearing from actually quite a few CEOs is that they're being told on the side by the Commerce Department that they really ought to think about sourcing if they can in places other than China, that there's not a huge degree of confidence that they can work out protections for companies who are doing business there, that there might be short-term gains in saving money, but there will be a long-term cost. And certainly companies like Westinghouse, for example, whose nuclear power plant technology was is stolen and is now being used by China to build power plants around the world, they can attest to that. There is a long-term cost to doing business there in terms of lost intellectual property.
I want to ask you about a data point that we saw here. Job openings, record 7.3 million in December. Just an analysis on that. Seems like that's good if you're looking for a job, but maybe not so much if you want to hire someone.
It's fantastic if you're looking for a job. And I actually dove pretty deep into these numbers. It's not just job openings, but also, of course, the unemployment rate at a 50-year low. Wages are starting to rise. It's feeling more and more like a full employment economy. It's noteworthy that part of the Fed's mandate from Congress is to pursue full employment. In other words, this is what a normal, healthy economy should feel like. It's tough for hiring managers. I have pity for those who work in HR and have to find people who are qualified to fill spots. But ultimately, it creates an awful lot of good, too. We've seen a huge decline just in the last couple of years in minority unemployment. The number of women in the workplace is also rising. And we're starting to see just the beginning inklings of the income gap starting to close between the richest and poorest Americans. So those are the social benefits of full employment. And I think while it is difficult for corporations to compete in an environment like that, the other benefit is that ultimately successful companies will find a way to grow productivity. And that translates into higher living standards for everyone.
Thanks so much for the analysis. Chris Lowe, chief economist at FTN Financial in New York. Coming up, a drug company gets a government warning for its handling of opiates.
Conversation that's on the money. You're listening to the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
The FDA sent a warning letter to drug distributor McKesson, accusing the company of shipping what are characterized as illegitimate opioid products. Let's learn more about it from Riley Griffin, healthcare reporter at Bloomberg, based in New York. Riley, kind of bring us up to date here. A thumbnail sketch of what the FDA is saying to McKesson.
Yeah, absolutely. McKesson, which is one of the largest drug distributors in the U.S., sent pharmacies prescription opioids that had been removed from their bottles and replaced with over-the-counter painkillers, the generic, which is actually better known as Aleve, the Food and Drug Administration said on February 7th. And this warning letter suggested that the company had failed to respond adequately after being notified by regulators and drugstore customers about the tampered bottles, and also said that the company failed to keep proper records of its internal investigation on the matter.
So it seems pretty significant. I mean, does this mean that there are customers who thought they were getting stronger meds and they got a leave, or are they saying yet whether it actually got that far?
Yeah, they thought they were getting their prescription opioids. Back in September of 2016, Rite Aid notified McKesson that one of its Michigan pharmacies had received a bottle of about 100 tablets of prescription painkiller oxycodone. And the seal had been broken. The bottle no longer contained the opioid, but rather held 15 tablets of Aleve.
This cannot be good for the industry at large.
No, it's not good, especially amidst the opioid crisis, which was responsible for about 50,000 related overdose deaths in 2017. The crisis has really spurred the FDA to act in three different ways. Commissioner Gottlieb is working to increase enforcement targeting illegal, unapproved, and counterfeit products being shipped through international mail facilities and across the border. It's also working to stop the online sales of illegal opioids. But what this really suggest this McKesson story is that the agency is also going to be focusing on efforts to regulate the legitimate drug supply chain of opioids.
Yeah, you talk about the supply chain. It just shows you that you have the manufacturer, and that's obviously significant, but it's all the way through the chain, from the time that it's manufactured to the time that it's sitting there at the pharmacy.
Mm-hmm. From the manufacturer to the distributor in marketing. Basically, this suggests that the supply chain is being compromised by malicious actors, and Gottlieb himself said that the McKesson situation is case in point for how distributors may see opioids stolen from them and funneled into the illicit opioid market. He called it unacceptable in an interview this morning and said that they won't hesitate to act when companies neglect their responsibilities to maintain the security of the supply chain.
So they're getting on it right away and looking into it. But what about the people who are taking those drugs?
There haven't been reported cases beyond these three in Michigan, but we are waiting to see what McKesson has to say on the matter moving forward.
Good details. Thanks so much, Riley Griffin. Quite a story. Riley Griffin, healthcare reporter at Bloomberg in New York. Still ahead, Travel Tuesday, making plans for a much-needed spring break. And Bloomberg checks the markets next.
This is Chicago's all-news station, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
WBBM News Time, 12:30. Good afternoon. I'm Cisco Cotto.
And I'm Chris Kreidel. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM.
Stocks are rallying. We'll see what's propelling the markets.
Travel Tuesday, planning a spring break trip on a day where air travel is being impacted by winter storms.
Social media can be a challenge for young people and other couples after they've parted ways.
Falling ice is closing sidewalks and streets in the Chicago Loop.
Mexican drug lord Joaquin El Chapo Guzman's been found guilty on all counts at his drug distribution trial in New York.
On Wall Street, the Dow up 342 points, the NASDAQ up 98, S&P 500 up by 35.
33 degrees in Chicagoland, heading to a high of 35. Some more snow on the way, not much though. Maybe a coating to an inch late this afternoon into the evening hours. The Noon Business Hour is presented by Old Second Bank.
Winter storms are making it a rough day at the airports across the country. Let's check in with Joe Sweeterman, professor of public services and director at the Chaddick Institute at DePaul University here in Chicago. Welcome back to the Noon Business Hour, Joe. How's Chicago taking this?
Well, it's certainly psychologically maybe more difficult than it is from a logistics standpoint, that we just came off a couple tough polar vortex periods, and now we have double-digit cancellations at O'Hare. There's about, as of early this morning, there was 263 cancellations. It appears about 10% of O'Hare flights were canceled. You know, that's a lot of folks who are having their trips disrupted.
Yeah, we understand that there are more than 1,000 flights were grounded on Tuesday and today.
Yeah, that's right. So as you look at the outlook for the rest of the day, all the ripple effect is happening now, and that's about the number we expect for the day. And it's unfortunately a Tuesday. It's, you know, middle of February. The traffic volumes are low. It shouldn't be quite like the last one where we had this multi-day outage where we had, you know, people stuck in hotels and shelters and everything because of the outage. But this one is remarkable because we had such really little snow. I mean, 0.46 inches at Midway, for example. But you combine that with last night's just dramatic icing, which is something like I've never seen, of just instant slick ice that even the salt trucks couldn't keep up at the airports. I think for the airlines, this is going to hit the bottom line for their quarter, especially at United and American, because O'Hare's had a tough month.
That ice is still out there, by the way, if you want to know about that. But do the airlines lose money?
Oh, yeah. This is, what they tend not to do too bad on is when there's air traffic control type things where things are backed up and people get shuffled around. But when you ground planes for a good chunk of a day at O'Hare, you know, a lot of that revenue never comes back. And I think, unfortunately, we've had a really good run at O'Hare at Midway. You know, we added the new runways north and south, and we no longer have the fog cancellations like we used to when the visibility is bad. You know, but it just seems like this extreme weather is rearing its head this year more than we've seen in a few years. And at least from a financial standpoint, that's going to hit the bottom line.
Yeah, especially dangerous with the ice. Joe, always good to have you with us. Joe Schwederman, Professor of Public Services, Director of the Chaddick Institute at DePaul.
Well, the markets are gaining ground today, and we are joined by Michael Palumbo, who is manager of the TMT Perseverance Fund and author of the book Calculated Risk here in Chicago. Welcome back to the Noon Business Hour. Is there a trend here in the markets?
Well, good afternoon, Chris and Cisco. You know, the trend right now is up, and again, we're seeing it today. You know, we had obviously a terrible fourth quarter last year where tech stocks were, some were down as much as 50% in one quarter. But we went into this year with a lot of questions, a lot of uncertainty, and a lot of times when you have those scenarios, the market ends up having relief rallies, and that's what you're basically seeing here in the first month and a half of 2019. So far, so good as far as if you're long in the stock market.
Now, how much today, how much of this is the fact that it looks like we may have a deal to keep the government open? Wall Street probably pretty excited about that.
I think it's almost completely. And I don't usually like to say there's one event that causes a lot of things. Usually markets, there's too many data points that are driving markets. But today it's obvious that the deal between President Trump and the House Democrats seems like it's gonna end up happening, and it looks like the shutdown is not going to happen. And that's great. Not only is it good economically, good for the folks that weren't going to get a paycheck, but also it just shows maybe some of this dysfunction is going to stop. I sure hope so. But you know, at least it's a good sign short term that things are better.
Let's talk about one of our story stocks today, Electronic Arts. They sort of hit a rough patch. Now they seem to be rebounding, up more than 5% today.
Yeah, well, EA has had a tough go. Like we talked about the sell-off in the fourth quarter, that stock was $150 about 6 months ago, and since then sold off pretty hard. But then they announced earnings last week. The numbers were bad, and actually the forecasts were just as bad. So the stock had continued down, and then news came out yesterday that a new game, which I know you guys are big gamers like I am, I'm sure, but a new game called Apex Legends.
We're not even listening to you right now, in fact, Mike. We're playing right now.
I can't blame you. So Apex Legends, I guess, is a new game that's come out. I was not aware of this game in particular because it's so new. It already has 25 million users. Now, that is the quickest to 25 million users of any game in history, and it blows away the numbers that Fortnite has had. Now, Fortnite currently has 200 million users, so that's what shows what can happen to games like this. So, you know, this industry is just like the movie industry, like Disney. I mean, it's only as good as what your newest movies, in this case, newest games are. So if Apex Legends does have legs here and it builds a base where you get 100, 200 million users like Fortnite, it could very much help EA start to get a rebound here in the stock. So you're seeing the stock up 5%, and it's probably for good reason.
All right, a calculated risk, perhaps. Michael, good to talk with you again. Thanks for joining us. Michael Palumbo, manager of the TMT Perseverance Fund, author of the book Calculated Risk here in Chicago.
Weekday, the WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Travel Tuesday on the Noon Business Hour, sponsored by Kaler Luggage. Today's latest winter storm may have you dreaming of spring, maybe a warm weather vacation. Well, let's uncover some airfare deals with the help of Ann McDermott, editor at FareCompare.com, based in Los Angeles. And before we get into maybe some of the specific deals that are out there in the especially locations. Is there ever a good time to look for airfares? It seems like it's really tough to know when you can find the greatest fares.
Well, it's more a matter of when you fly that makes it cheap. Winter is typically a cheap time to fly. Fall, and to a lesser extent, spring. Summer, of course, and big holiday periods like Thanksgiving and Christmas. That's where it's going to be expensive. But right now, we're in a sweet spot.
Oh, nice. So if we're looking to get away for spring break, are there particular locations? I would imagine a lot of people want to go where it's warm.
Well, I was just looking up some flights in March. I just sort of put in, you know, look for flights deals any days in March. And I found out of Chicago, let's see, Tampa, $77. Florida is particularly cheap right now. Orlando, $97. These are round trip prices. Miami, $103. Also saw New Orleans for $97. And these are, you know, one of these airlines is Spirit, the other is United and American. But I think the real story for spring break is Europe, if you can do it. Just as a benchmark, I looked over years past fares from Boston to London. And from 2013, it was almost about $900 for travel in March. This year, that figure drops to $330. But I found some specific ones out of Chicago. London, $398. Dublin, $403. Barcelona, $465. Rome, $511. I mean, that is really, really good.
Why is that so low?
Well, it's partly because it has gotten very, very competitive. There are a lot more low-cost carriers going to Europe. There's more people interested in going, and the fares have just come down. Oil prices, they're not the cheapest that's ever been, but they've been holding steady in a sort of a low place. That sounds kind of dumb, but it's just a good time to go.
And so last minute, I mean, you mentioned that now is a pretty good time to start booking things. People often say, hey, you got to get it done early if you want a cheap flight.
Well, that's still true. There's no such thing as, you know, last minute deals. The airlines used to offer them. They used to offer them on a regular basis, you know, like on a Friday, they'd have deals to take off Saturday and return Sunday. They don't really do that anymore because they don't have to. They've gotten very good at computerization. That's my way of saying they know when we want to fly, and they make the number of seats available. They don't have leftover empty seats that they need to fill, or precious few of them. I think all of us who've been on a plane lately know that.
What do most Americans do? Do they stay somewhere in the realm of where they live, or most of them go overseas?
It just varies. I think more people, you know, more people in the U.S. probably fly domestically. And, you know, because there's so many good deals, and particularly if you're kind of sick of winter, you know, you want to head down to Florida, and Southern Florida is very accommodating with the prices right now.
Yeah, I don't know, with ice falling all over the place, why would anyone in Chicago want to go somewhere warm right now? Yeah. Ann, thanks so much for the insight. Ann McDermott, editor at faircompare.com, based in Los Angeles, literally looking out the studio window at unbelievable snowfall here along the lakefront, and thinking, is there...
And if you walked outside, you'd be sliding because of the ice.
That's right. So definitely want to get somewhere warm. Join us at this time tomorrow, Personal Finance Wednesday. Still to come, millennials, social media, and divorce.
A wallet full of information. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Breaking up is hard to do. It can be especially difficult in the age of social media. Let's talk about some of the challenges with Shelley Palmer, CEO of the Palmer Group in New York. Welcome back to the Noon Business Hour, Shelley. What is it that is different about this group of people?
Well, there are a couple things that are pretty obvious. One is that you don't know who you get in the divorce. You never know, right? So that's in the physical world. In the digital world, your entire life generally has been posted on Facebook. So all of your pictures, all of your vacations, your travel, people sort of face brag for basically all of the time. And so when a couple breaks up, there are two things you have to deal with. One, what do you do with the memories? And two, what do you do with the friends and who gets who? So there's several hours of decoupling. And then, of course, there's what the lawyers are going to do with the social accounts, because to be fair, once scraped, it doesn't matter whether you delete it or not. The lawyers have all of the information they need, depending on the state. That could be pretty significant.
Millennials as a group, do they marry a little later than the rest of us?
There's a bunch of statistics about millennials. People say that the divorce rate is down. Being millennial and divorced is a fairly rare occurrence right now, but that also they're not getting married as much. So to your point, many are marrying later, and so they're cohabitating and together as couples. And so the millennials are generally more expert in decoupling their Facebook than, let's say, a couple that's been married 20, 25 years, that's, you know, for the last 10 years been mom has been the keeper of the institutional family memory on Facebook. When millennials break up, they tend to be more digitally savvy. But yes, they are tending to marry later. And so I'm not sure the statistic that the divorce rate is down. I'm not sure the marriage rate is up at the same level.
Is this made more difficult by the fact that I see a lot of couples, especially with Facebook, where they have these joint profiles instead of your profile and my profile? It's one couple's profile. If there's a divorce, it seems like that creates a bigger problem.
It may, although it could actually be simpler. You just, you know, forget about that profile and you keep your individual profiles. Almost everybody, the solution that they choose is to just create another Facebook profile, making you scratch your head and wonder how many of the 2.6 billion Facebook profiles are duplicates and triplicates and or morplicates than that for people. But yeah, no, you're right. Either you're going to delete that couple's account or you're going to try to decouple it, which would really be a trick.
Yeah, talk about a tough time dividing
up. I've been decoupled.
That's right, decoupled. You've got to divide up your friends. It's almost like a fantasy draft lottery. Shelly, thank you so much. Shelly Palmer, CEO of the Palmer Group. You can follow him on Twitter at Shelly Palmer. Also find him at ShellyPalmer.com. Bloomberg checks the markets next.
WBBM News Time, 12:55. Let's take a look at the markets with Elisa Peretti.
Chris, we're at our highest levels of the day. The Dow up 400 points now, or 1 2/3%. NASDAQ is gaining 106, so that's a gain of about 1.5%. S&P higher by 38. And the Wintrust WBBM Chicago Index from Bloomberg is also in the green. All of Wall Street is benefiting from one deal and has hopes for another. U.S. lawmakers have tentatively agreed on a spending plan that would avoid a second government shutdown. And a White House advisor says President Trump wants a deal on trade with China. Tech, developed by a company called Altitude Angel, it's based in England, should help make the skies safer as they get more crowded with drones. Airports, prisons, and nuclear power stations will be easier to discern on new mapping data. If a drone starts to move into a restricted area, it will be stopped. That's known as geofencing. With business at 25 and 55, live from Bloomberg, I'm Elisa Parenti, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM.
WBBM and HD Chicago, WCFS FM and HD1 Elmwood Park, Chicago.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.